Tested live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Asokoloko. We played that song deliberately because right now everybody is struggling. Whether we are consumers, we might have yet to feel the pinch, but the truth is individuals who are at the core and at the coalface of taking key investment decisions on our behalf, big business, big policymakers, even those who work within key financial institutions have had a hectic day. Hectic couple of days on the back of the tariff announcements regarding the global trade and how that has now come under pressure. Well, tonight we look to expand on that conversation, especially looking at economic expectations. From a South African point of view, we've got quite a bit to contend with. Not only what we see unfolding on the equity space of our markets, but the tariffs, what they mean for our trade relationships with key global partners, including America, but most importantly, the GNU uncertainty. What was once highlighted and viewed as a great step in terms of South Africa's political future, having diverse and divergent opinions at the table, has now come to cause ongoing delays and uncertainty in terms of our fiscal positioning and budgeting plans. To tell us more about how we manage this, because siyasokola, quite literally, is Sifiso Sikhenjana, economist and the managing director of ESG Analytics. Sifiso, always great to speak to you, sir. The last time I saw you was at the first initial budget speech on the 19th of Feb. A lot has happened since then, right?
So even then, some so-called. Yeah, nothing's changed since then. Good evening, Kuku.
Such a pleasure to speak to you as always, Sifiso. And I played that song deliberately because it really does feel like for the first time in a long while, there's just this heightened level of uncertainty. And maybe that we also need to be aware of how that impacts the future growth prospects, not only of the world, but a country like South Africa. So maybe let's just address the concerns around the uncertain environment we're in, largely on the back of Trump's tariffs.
I mean, in fact, Google, I think it was about maybe a month or two ago, maybe 2 months back, and I was listening in on your show, and I subsequently sent you a chart on the volatility index between Biden's era and Trump's era in the previous administration. And already you saw then that the volatility index, which is the VIX, had spiked materially during Trump's era and declined quite specifically around Biden's era. And so, I mean, this is not new to us, is that Trump has really, I think, been quite consistent in so far as he's wrecked the market and wreaked havoc in the market. And I mean, I think we see it in some of the guys we look at as long-term traders, right? I mean, Warren Buffett came out already when he's seeing that Trump is about to get ahead in terms of the polls. And he said, I'm going into US treasuries. And I was looking now, in fact, all the billionaires in the US, he's the only one who's in the black in terms of net worth right now. Because he in essence, he went to cash positions and or fixed income positions, which in essence was anticipating that, of course, then it's going to be the return of the dollar smile. And that means very good things for fixed income markets.
Hmm. I hear you on the fixed income space. Funny enough, one of our listeners actually shared a tweet. He said he also moved his money into cash and saying that he's a genius at Mazel Tov. And maybe that's also something we do need to have a look at, right? Because yes, cash might be viable. We also see a lot of movement within the PGM space, gold as well, as a safe haven commodity. But even those will come with their own, I guess, short-term waves that we also need to be mindful of. I'm just reminded of the pandemic and some of the shifts we saw there.
Yeah, I mean, I think usually gold is kind of the one kind of commodity that gives you a sense in terms of where the flight is moving, because it's the less consumption-based commodity. If you kind of take India out of the gold consumption space, India and Russia, the other consumption-based commodities, you know, the PGMs, etc., then tell you around expectations around global growth demand. And so when the market's expecting growth to taper off, et cetera, you might start to see a softening in those commodities. But then gold then is usually then the safe haven. It's an interesting space now because, of course, China was the first to move late last year, if you remember, the amount of money they committed to a municipal recapitalization program. And then soon after that, they announced that they were doing, call it a tactical monetary easing. And so that, I think, there was a kind of a leading indicator was missed by the market that China was expecting a softening in demand. Mm. And so they were trying to spur demand. Later, we saw early in January, then a yield inversion in the U.S. And often what that means is that your long-term, the cost of the yield on your long-term bonds actually is lower than the yield on your short-term bonds, which means investors don't have faith that the longer they keep that they'll get more money, so they want their returns today. The inversion has predicted 18 out of the last 20 recessions. And so all of the things that are happening, starting to tell you that there's a global market and kind of a bit of a depression coming from a global markets point of view, and a lot of the softening is going to come through on the back of the volatility, then that's materially then going to, I think, drive a lot of the flows back into the gold as we see it right now.
It makes for very intriguing times in terms of asset allocation and where capital is going to, and also making sure that preservation remains a priority for many investors. But this is also influenced essentially by our trade relations, and maybe to bring it closer to home in terms of just unpacking more around the dynamics of trade that we have with the US. One thing's quite certain, whether it's our mineral resources down to our grapes, our citrus, and other products that we're able to export, America is a key market for us. And I'm keen to understand, Sviso, if you've been able just to, you know, compile and have a look at the metrics and key areas of concern as to what these tariffs might mean for us as an open economy with a high reliance on trade, especially with the global counterparts like the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we saw is that there are some minerals that are exempt from the tariff. And that includes kind of PGMs, coal, interestingly bullion, some manganese as well, and chromium. And then some of those that are exposed there, you know, is iron ore, for example. I mean, that's already a sector that's currently under quite a bit of pressure in South Africa. And then, of course, a lot of questions around then what does this mean for AGOA, where non-minerals-based exports are exposed. That includes agriculture, that includes our vehicle manufacturing. I mean, I think Germany is our number one export destination from a vehicle point of view, but the US is right there, right, as well, right behind Germany. And so I think that's going to be quite interesting in terms of the vehicle manufacturing. I think also, though, Linda, I'll start with the vehicle manufacturing. There's an interesting development that I guess came out of the EU this morning, that they are, in essence, loosening some of the targets and legal imposition around electric vehicles for 2030. If you remember, they said they're, in essence, going to decommission ICE or internal combustion engines. And so I think then, in essence, you know, the EU being almost a sunset market from an internal combustion engine point of view, I think it's going to remain interesting in South Africa, for South Africa, given what's happening globally. And then when we look at agriculture as well, I mean, we've been looking at intra-Africa trade from an agricultural point of view. We've been looking at strengthening our EU partnerships from an agri point of view. And so even if there is a lapse from an AGOA point of view, we still have the likes of Mexico, you know, who are competing well in terms of partnering with South Africa, Brazil, as well as, I mean, South Africa is what, the second largest exporter of macadamia nuts, I think, after Australia, if not number one now. And so I think there are areas in which we often talk about as a revealed comparative advantage, which yes. means the which means simply the marginal cost of contribution, marginal cost of production of that good tends to be lower than a competing country. And so I think where the kind of U.S. trade reality soils itself, we might find opportunity elsewhere just based on the levels of RCA that we've got with particularly these agricultural goods, which is really high value goods. And so I think we will feel some pain, of course, but I think there'll definitely be kind of a trade partner substitution effect that's going to play itself out.
So we can't ignore that this complicates South Africa's objectives of growth. Many banks and institutions had put out growth forecasts for GDP at about 1.5, 1.4, 1.6% overall, with a heightened level of optimism. But what are the risks to economic growth for South Africa here?
Now, that's, I think, an interesting point now, because we must then look at sources of growth in South Africa. Personal services and financial and business services are the largest contributor to GDP in South Africa, I think contributing about 24%. And so that's a lot more about local demand, right? When we think about then our kind of our export reality, the agricultural sector is going to be, of course, quite exposed. The mining sector is going to be exposed to some extent, as well as the manufacturing. But when you look at manufacturing, contributes about almost 11%. Agri and mining contribute 7%. And so we've got about, let's say, 18% of our GDP wholly at risk at that level from an export exposure point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's upward risks there. And then we look then at where the other growth must come from, and do we think that the kind of Trump effect is going to be inflationary? Of course, we're seeing it going to be inflationary. And so that's going to drive a lot of issues internally, because we've got imported inflation. And I think that's going to dampen even the other areas in which we have call it stronger sources of GDP in our local economy. Sure. It means it's going to drive fuel prices up. It means cost of goods are going up. And I mean, I was looking at one of the stats that I was just talking about, the iPhone, that the cost of assembly, just based on what's happening, is going to move from about $500 to about $800 or something like that. And so I think that's going to translate in many other parts, other issues as well. I mean, we've got an accessories market, vehicle accessories market, that also sells stuff to the US as well. And so I think that's also going to be pressured. And also, I mean, what we saw with China over the weekend, right, when they started responding from their tariff point of view and said, no, we're not going to call it tariffs, but we're going to call it, I'm trying to remember the actual word that they used, they call it export licensing. And so simply they're saying that we've got critical minerals that are required in terms of your green economy transition. So all your solar related stuff,
or
your EVs, all those critical minerals, they're saying the export licensing requirement says that we halt any exports to you up until you tell us what the import good is going to be used for. In essence, this is kind of import suspension that they're doing, right?
Exactly. So, and you saw what Trump did, right? This afternoon he said he'll actually impose another 50% if they follow through. Do you think China's going to back down on this one?
I mean, Trump is the ill-advised, right? And I mean, one of our industry colleagues, Uayabonga, actually tweeted about Theodore Roosevelt in the post the Great Depression, particularly coming back and say, so it turns out this kind of reciprocal tariff act in America goes back to 1934,
sure,
where he's saying, can we loosen this, because it really makes issues very difficult for us. And in fact, there's even literature in a South African context. When you look at our textiles industry, looking at the growth between 1966 and all the way to 1991, where we were not a participant in the World Trade Organization, And we had tariffs all the way up to, I think, about 100, close to 100% for textiles. And once we became signatories to the World Trade Organization, 1991, we were given 5 years to drop those tariffs all the way, I think, to about 20-something percent. And it decimated our textiles industry, because we didn't have capacity to compete.
Yes.
And so we really must understand the difference between protectionism and economic nationalism. Protectionism is what we're doing with tariffs, and it really doesn't actually help you compete. And it's a paper fire for the period in which you're doing it, but eventually, you know, we'll know who's not wearing the jocks under the water.
Yep.
But when you talk about economic nationalism, it's about understanding that I've got a weak sector. I've got to incubate that sector so that it can have a higher RCA in the next 5 years, the next 10 years, and compete well in the global economy. And so economic nationalism is really what Trump should have been going for, and not protectionism, because it's really got short legs, and I think it's really going to bite. And so I think, the whole thing about the waiting game and sitting on your hands, that's exactly what the rest of the global economy is going to do. They're just going to wait for Trump to implode. just because that this is the approach that he's taking is not economically sensible or sound, and it doesn't have long legs. And so I think, we're in for a rough ride. You know, welcome to welcome to the anaconda. But I think certainly it's going to be an interesting one to see. But I think at some point, sensibility will prevail.
Hopefully, sensibility will prevail at some point. As you mentioned, though, a great note to leave it off on there, Sifiso. Lots more that we can unpack about this conversation. So many perspectives, so many angles, and so many dynamics to consider, no doubt. And thanks for reminding us that this might not be new. We've seen previous interventions of this matter, but they've proven not to be viable over the long term nonetheless. Thanks again for your time.
All the best, and have a lovely evening. Thanks, Google.
Thank you. That's Sifiso Kenjana joining us as an economist and the managing director of ESG Analytics.
And if you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.